Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the talk show Uplifting Communities, presenting Bob's Bus. Today we're going to have a really great show for you guys, and y'all just bear with us, you know, because when we start, this is going to be powerful. I'm talking about powerful, really powerful. Okay, with that said, I'm going to go ahead on and introduce you guys. I'm going to pass it on and introduce you to the founder of Bob Bus, okay, and Miss Phyllis, all right? And she's going to go ahead on and take it from here. Go ahead, Miss Phyllis.
Well, hello there. Thank you so much. It is always exciting for us to chime in and see what's going on in our community. Dr. Kwaku is who's going to be our speaker, but he's like what I call us a grown timer, and this technology takes him a minute or three. So he's trying to figure it out. He keeps thinking that there's a website when there's just a phone number. But give him a minute. He's on his way. But in the meantime, I just want to talk a little bit about Uplifting Communities and what they're doing for so many different small businesses. This is a platform that allows us to have a voice, not only that, but a directory, so we can get to know where everybody's at. And Mr. John L. Brown, he has opened doors for a lot of us. So we have zero excuses. I love what we call the cheerleaders. Those, yeah, what you're saying is good, but there's no action. We are really hoping that all of our listeners will be prepared to come to action, to make change, to actually strengthen the community, like the walkers out there, like Mr. John L. Brown and others, Earlene Gray, that are pounding the pavement, if you will, trying to hold us together. But it's going to take some more glue. And you can donate to Uplifting Communities. I'm sure that there's probably Mr. Brown, is there a website or a donation page that people can go to?
Well, you can go to the $ JLB 2468 on Cash App.
On Cash App. Okay. That's a good way to
do
it.
Cash it. As the $ JLB small letters 2468. And, you know, that'd be good.
Okay.
What's the prefix to Brother Kwaku?
Kwaku 707.
Kwaku?
Okay. Yes.
Right.
And do we have Earlene on here so I can introduce her?
Oh, yeah, Earlene been on.
Yes,
oh,
I am here and excited and ready to go.
Okay, and ready to go. Okay, well, can you tell us, callers, while we're letting Dr. Kwaku in, who you are and what you're doing in the community?
Absolutely, and I just want to also thank Mr. John L. Brown for the amazing things that he's doing in the community and just constantly striving and, you know, so on and so forth. Well, my name is Earlene Gray. I am Chief Communications Officer of Build Our Businesses, and I am also a financial educator. My goal is to each one, teach one, reach one, to make sure that no family is left behind. That's pretty much my mission statement. And
we're out here
shaking and grooving in the community and just making sure that we can reach as many people as possible.
We got the doctor on the line, y'all. We got the doctor on the line.
Yes.
Let's bring him on in. I hope that's him. I'm sure bring him in. Come on, Doc.
Well, that's Dr. Kwaku.
All right, caller. State your name and where you're calling from. State your name and where you're calling from.
Oh, you're talking to me. I thought you were talking about one of your
guests.
My name is Dr. Ninana Kwaku, and I'm calling from.
Okay.
Fairfield,
all right, but
California.
Dr. Kwaku, I just wanted to make sure it was you. I would like for them to bring you on, you understand, because you deserve this. I mean, you deserve to be brought on right. Okay, I say that because I wasn't really sure that was you, but you, oh, man, God, no, you got to be brung on right. Okay, Ms. Phyllis, could you please bring Dr. Kwaku on?
Well, you know, after that introduction, enough said, but let me say one more thing. This man is really in the community worldwide, including Africa, especially Africa, in my opinion. And the knowledge that this man brings to the table is something we should all pay attention to. I know I'm learning. And as I said before, it's time for us to stop saying, yeah, we're in agreement without doing something. He can help us get to where we can take action. Let's hear what he has to say. Thank you for calling in. And if you need to make a comment to him, you can press number one. And Mr. Brown will let you in. Okay, and with all of that said, Dr. Nyananu Kweku.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Phyllis. It's a pleasure, you know, always to be in conversation with people like yourself and some of the other people who are going to be on the show, because it's always I always see these things as an opportunity to connect with somebody else on another level about whatever process that we all need to be doing in order for us to be successful moving forward in the 21st century. I'm not sure exactly where to start with this, but my journey began, you know, some time ago, without dating myself, back at when Malcolm X was, after he had left the Black Muslims. And I began to study and to realize that for whatever reason, we had been working extremely hard, but we hadn't been getting anywhere. And the reason we hadn't been getting anywhere is because we are disconnected from resources. We are disconnected from information. And because of miseducation and the lack of people having their right mind, and I don't want to say that lightly. I want people to understand what I mean. I don't mean that you're crazy, but Brother Amos Wilson would state that we have to be crazy to continue to live the way that we live and not do anything about it. And so people, in some ways, that people are not at fault, but in a lot of ways that the responsibility lies with each one of us to do something in spite of the odds. And that's what a real revolution is all about. It's not about knowing whether you can win a particular battle. It's about being in the battle continuously until, you know, it's won. So
that's profound within itself. Wow.
Yeah. One of the ways that I felt was the best way for me to use my expertise and my knowledge was to be working directly in the community with the children and the family, because that's where it starts at. We can get out here and we can stand on a box and preach out in the corner. We can preach in the churches on Sunday. But we have to be where people live every day. And what I mean by that, they didn't go to school every day. They go to school hungry. They go to school unprepared. Mm-hmm. They go to school in disarray in terms of their mental or psychological profile.
Wow.
And so we felt like, okay, wow, let's get in here. If we don't have access to the parents, we have access to these kids because we're working in the school system.
Mm-hmm.
And what better way to get in connection with those parents? So that's how it started for me. We became engaged with the children at school, the ones who were having the most difficult time adjusting, and that led us to be connected to those families. At some point in time, we had to go and talk to those parents and say, look, we understand that you're struggling. We understand that you don't have all the information, and you don't know how to deal with these systems that are in place, but we're going to be a buffer for you. We're going to be here to assist you with dealing with the administrative people in the system to ensure that your child gets the education that we all pay for.
Deserve.
That's right. We all pay for them, so they deserve. And I used to tell the students that. I say, any time that you set up in a classroom and you make F's, you make whatever failing grades you're making, and you don't see that as important, then what's going on here is that you're allowing these people to get a paycheck and go home and send their parents off to these great colleges at your expense.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you sometimes you have to break these kind of things down and you know, nickels and dimes and dollars and cents. And, you know, like I would tell students, I said, look, you would never in your right mind would you allow somebody to come on your block and take something from you, but yet still these people take something from you every day.
Every
in the
day.
System, and you do nothing about it. And they understood that. They said, wow, how come you were involved in this? I said, because it's important to me, because it's important to you. Because without you, there is no community. Without us, there is no community. And so
Wow. We
had kind of got them to buy into the idea that each one of us are responsible for each other. One of the ways that we did that was we went into the classrooms, and we were operating with them on a buddy system, more or less. In other words, we have 10 students in there. Every student in that class was responsible for a student sitting next to him. In other words,
wow.
If your buddy fails, then you're responsible for that, because we're assigning you guys to be in a buddy system. You work together. If one guy is sharp in math, then you help him with math. If another guy is sharp in English, you help him in English. If it's science, you help him in that. So we got them to be operating on a buddy system where they were supporting each other. And not only that, they were rewarded at the end of the school year. And we said, well, everybody, grade point average that improves, we are going to see that they have access to a field trip this summer, or we're going to pay for a trip to take them on a vacation or whatever. And
so
and
they were
they
celebrating.
And they were celebrating, yeah. And they got to the point where they said, wow, you know, if somebody was not reading or somebody wasn't paying attention, the students would call on them before we would. You know, that's
wow.
The kind of camaraderie that developed in the classroom that Dr. Adams and I set up. And we became successful at it to the point where we walk down the street in East Oakland and all the students know us, even the ones that were not in our class. They knew us. And they wanted to be in our class. Yes.
I love it. That's better than the paycheck. That type of appreciation is better than the paycheck.
Oh, yes. And you know, I'd be walking down the street in East Oakland, hey, Dr. Kwaku. And I mean, you know, they gave that reference, they gave that respect. So we know, wow, we're reaching these people. Even if they only went from a D to a C, we're still reaching these people because they are paying attention and they have bought into what we are talking about. And so
and
therefore
in that improvement.
That's right. So therefore along with that, then we set it up where we knew some of them's parents were on drugs. And they had what you call absentee fathers. So what we did was we got young men together. In fact, I was, you know, operating with the first 100 black men in Oakland. And we would get these guys to volunteer on the weekend, and we would all get together and take these kids out of the city, you know, in the mountains, on a boat, to fishing, to amusement parks, to just different places, and educate them about what was going on in the world. In the process.
Wow.
And it
wow.
And it became it was gratifying for me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I know.
And we were certainly sad when they told us that they were no longer going to fund us, but they went even further than that to show you how this system works. Some of the people in the school system did not like the idea that we had that kind of privilege. And thought it was interfering with
wow.
therapy. And yes, they did. And even though.
Wow. But without them looking at the statistics of the those who have shown improvement such as your program, see, that's what you should be going by.
That's what
not
we were going by.
Not allowed they, it. Right.
They were not going by that. They said that
of,
by
wow.
students having a specialty, they felt like they was getting a special a process that the other students wouldn't get. They felt like this was interrupting when those kids came back to those regular classes with some of those other teachers. And so they
but
cut
my,
the funding. They cut
my
the funding.
Question is, how is bettering our children any type of interruption if we all have the same goal to better our children? See, that's the unanswered question right there.
Well, it is to me and to you and to anybody that we thought that was operating with a full deck that really took the children's welfare serious. But it wasn't about that. It was about power. It was about control. And so even after the money ran out, guess what we did? We figured we'd throw another wrench into the system. So, okay, you guys do not want us to get paid. We will volunteer and do our classes.
Wow.
Without money. So you know what they did then? They let us do it for a few weeks like that. Then they come back and say, well, we really don't have space for you. We're using space in the school. Yes. They had year round. But they came back and said, we don't have space for you. And if you guys are going to do it, if we do it off campus, they said, well, no, we can't allow the kids to go off campus. They have to be here on the campus. And that was what ended the reign that we were working in those schools in East Oakland. But we knew that it was a successful venture and that we needed to do this on a consistent basis or take it a step further, which was the objective in the first place, eventually get funds and start our own school. And this was before they started talking about all these charter schools that they finally gave people money to open up. And that's where we were headed. So we even continued to work with those families. We would go and we'd have homework study 2 or 3 days a week with the kids. We'd go by, check on the parents, and we'd support the parents, even though some of the parents were not, they didn't have the educational background to even help the children with their homework. So we would go by and help them. And even made progress in trying to get some of them to go back to school to learn how to read and be involved in their children's lives. And so that is the emphasis that has
ahead.
Always
go ahead. I got a question
meaning.
I want to ask you.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
No, I want you to finish your thought, but I want to ask you a question. I had to say that to jump in, so that way because I wouldn't forget.
No, okay, you're like me. But anyway. The process we know worked. The objective, the end result, that was eventually we were going to get enough funds that we were going to get funded enough to start our own school. That was the objective because then we tried to work within the system, and the system is not about working with any outside forces, and especially if it means interrupting their process. And they're not really concerned about the children's opportunity after they leave their school. They're concerned about putting seats and the dollar that they get every time a student fills one of those seats. I'm sure you guys are aware that they had a system at one time. I think they just, a few years ago stopped it. But they used to have a process by which if a student failed 2 years, they could not fail them. If a student failed 1 year, the next year they had to pass them, even though if they made straight F's. And what kind of sense does that make? And you have to look, so it's deeper than those parents who didn't have the skills. It's deeper than those students who didn't have the support. This is a system that is systematically trying to exercise them into poverty, into prisons, without even thinking about it.
Doc, I remember I went to school, when I was going to school, they used to fail you and make you repeat the same grade. You'll be good in math or you'll be good in English or whatever, but because you fail one class, they make you repeat the whole doggone school year. I failed one time. Okay, yeah. I had to repeat the whole school year. I was good in math, I was good in English, everything, but I failed a couple of classes, because of my fault, I wouldn't study, They made me repeat the whole the whole ninth grade.
Right.
Wow.
The whole ninth grade.
Well,
you know, and I said, I think to me that was leading you down failure road.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I wanted to ask you a question, Doc. I wanted to find out, where was the African Resource Center of Oakland? Where was that at? You remember
what was
that?
I'm not sure they were in existence. They're on Martin Luther King in Oakland now, because I am one of the members who go to the monthly meetings, and they're doing a lot of great work. But they were not around at that time. They had several other organizations.
Okay, now the reason I asked is because I could have. I don't know if that was the African Resource Center. It was on East. It was on MacArthur Boulevard, because I used to deliver mail in Oakland over at Eastmont Station. On MacArthur Boulevard, and right down the street, I don't know if that was the African Resource Center of Oakland, but I knew that the Black Panthers, used to be in that building too. But it looked like to me I saw African Resource Center of Oakland.
They had another.
And that was back in the '80s when I first started working for the post office, the early part of the '80s.
Yeah, they Dr. Wade Nobles. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him. He was one of the people who was instrumental in creating the African. I'm not sure it was called the African Resource Center. It was the African. I don't have the name right now. It's clear in my mind, but it began in West Oakland. In fact, I think it still exists. Yeah, and Dr. Wade Nobles.
Wasn't the Black Panther involved in that?
Well, the Black Panthers.
Huey Newton and the rest of them?
They were involved in educating students also, but they were the one who really started the breakfast program to really help those kids who were coming to school without food, and they were getting clothing and all those kind of things for kids who were coming to school. Clean.
And with.
And they still, in fact, the commemorator, it still exists in Berkeley, and they still, right to this day, they teach adult education classes to the parents, you know. So they are still active, but the thing about it is that we have to be able to somehow disconnect our people from believing that they have to be a part of the system, because the system has failed us. The system continues to fail us, and so therefore, it behooves us to establish a vehicle outside of that by which we can be entered.
Exactly.
That was that. If you really think about it, that's what was going on in the 30s and 40s after post-slavery, when the Black Wall Streets and all these things became evident. That's what was going on when we were going to all Black schools. We were seriously, we were educated then. We graduated, and you did not. They didn't allow you to take up space in their schools and not do the work. You know, so we lived in a different era, and we have got to bring back that era. And I think that people who have bought into this system as it is want to forget that era, when that was the era when we was most successful. Because, like I say, that was the time when we had the Black businesses. That's when we had the Black bank. That's when we had all of those things. We had over 200 historical Black universities and colleges. And now all of those things are gone. So, and a lot of people don't want to go back. They say, no, we can't do that. That's when you talk about those kind of things now, even your own people will accuse you of wanting to separate.
But no, you don't say no, Doc. You know, I feel as though, you know, the system, have failed us. And another thing, too, they the one that took it away from us, because I'm quite sure you remember this. And we got people that's listening in, you know, I don't know if they remembered it or not. But I remember when I was a young kid going to school, if I did something wrong on the way coming from home or something, my grandmother already knew it before I got home.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You understand? And then if I wouldn't have catch a whipping, a couple of whippings before I got home. And I got caught one before when I got home.
When you got home.
And now these days, man, you can't even do nothing. The system have changed so much until it's pathetic. And our young brothers and sisters out there, you understand, we can't even get them back on the right track because of the way the system have failed us, the way the system have did us wrong. Okay, so the only thing that I could say, you 100% right, man. You know, this is a heavy conversation. I don't want to start on this because, like, I was a Malcolm X follower. Okay,
mm-hmm.
You did me wrong, I do you wrong. You know, I was a strong Malcolm X follower. So, Martin Luther King, he was cool. Don't get me wrong.
So I have a question. Can I kind of step in for a second? This topic is really so heavy in the sense of you are absolutely right. These are services that we need today. But unfortunately, there are none out there like those types of programs. My question is, where do we even start to begin something like that? Because you pretty much relied on the school to be able to get to the children, to be able to help them. But those resources were taken away. So how will we collectively as a whole, as parents, you know, in a system with our children, how could we contribute or create some kind of educational learning for our children? Because right now what's happening is a lot of suburban families and households are buying teachers to come into their homes or have distant learning for a certain amount of schools in their community. You know, I just seen this on the news the other day. I'm like, wow, that's really smart. I don't know why it is that we don't have anything like that for ourselves. Because I see distant learning education, and to be honest with you, it's not an education. I don't know what that is. There's no structure. It's just thrown together. So how could we?
I would like to answer that. I'm sorry. I got to step in and answer this here too.
Go ahead, buddy.
You know, Erling.
Yes.
You're listening at it. Okay, you're listening at it. This is an educational program. You ain't going to find what you getting right here. You ain't going to find that in school. Okay, you're not going to find that in school. Talk shows, every Sunday, I make it myself. This is my time. This is my leisure time. This is my time to listen at different talk shows. And you find out so much. Don't you know, and I have to say this, Kanye West, we always talking about Kanye West, whatever his name is. Don't you know he bought property? He fixing to start his own black town? Lil Bootsy.
I wasn't even aware of that.
Yes, Lil Bootsy is fixing to start his own black town. This is where black people is going right now. They're going to have their own police department. They're going to have their own banks. They're going to have their own medical centers. And things like that. They bought a whole bunch of property.
Mm.
And they're building their own little black city.
This is what Brother Umar Johnson was talking about, too, when he was talking about opening up an academy for young black boys. But before we even get to that, let's look at what the Asian people do, the Chinese people do. They have a school in their community after their kids attend the public school system. Now, what we need to do, so we can do it. What we need to do is to get a grant, and for people who want their students to be successful, have them to send them to the school that we set up outside of the perimeters of the Board of Education. And we can do that because you are allowed to do it. All you have to do is get your certification for that. And so we could, until at such time when we can create black towns, Rosewoods, or whatever this is, right now, students are failing. They're dropping out of school at astronomical numbers. They're winding up, 50% of them are winding up on probation or parole before they're even 18 years old. And then after that, they're out here in the world. They're getting somebody pregnant. They're going to prison. And then we are building another generation of absent fathers and kids without parents. So we have
Absolutely.
To do this. It's not a matter of what we need to do. We need
it
to start
sounds like we need a strong grant writer. We need a strong grant writer because
we
have
the
501c in place.
Yeah, because they have these what they call charter schools. There's nothing to say that we can't start our own charter school and not ask them for funds, but get our own funds.
Mm-hmm.
That
Absolutely.
Would be, you know, so that would suffice until it's such time when we can develop a larger system where we can get a lot of students. We can get all those students that don't have access. But it means that, you know, people have to be. There's nobody, and I tell you, I've been in a lot of homes over the years, and I have never went in a home where somebody said, "Well, I want my kid to fail." Even a crackhead wants their child to succeed.
Right.
Everybody wants their child to succeed. They just don't know how. They They don't have the things they need to do to make it a reality. So it behooves us. You are Malcolm X alumni. I'm a Malcolm X alumni. It behooves us to be about the business of creating these kind of things so that some kids are going to, we can save some of these kids, and they're going to go back and save some of the other kids. Because one of the things that happens with that, when we went into the school and voluntarily set up that program for kids, there were kids in that school who were doing well. Guess what? They start going to the office and ask them, can they go to our class instead of their regular class? This is what they were pissed off at us about. They felt like we were disrupting their process, because initially we started it out to just work with little boys. But the little girls said, well, why are you guys, why are they getting this special treatment and we're not getting it? So we had to start letting these girls down. And then other students started to complain about they wanted to come and participate in our program, and that's when they put us out of the system.
But see, as opposed to partnering with you guys, and then everybody can eat, and the children will get the benefit.
Yeah,
see, that's the system that we live in. That's the what I call the destroyer, the father of the lie. But we do have an opportunity to make change. I believe we have to continue to come together, get our resources together, and we can create our own. And I believe now is absolutely the time for us to do that. We're doing it now.
That's right.
We're doing it now.
But every day, myself personally, Dr. Adams, Jerry Scott, Donna Reinhart, a lot of the brothers that I work with and the 100 black men around the Bay Area, Dr. Wade Nobles, it was a large cadre of people who were working outside of the system to make a better life for the people that live within our communities. And it's our responsibility to keep that going, because the system is not going to come over and say, hey, here's $10 million. Y'all go over there and open up this thing and change your community. They don't want your community to change, first of all. Because they make money off of these people.
That's right.
How many people are in the social welfare system? Do you have any idea how that is? If people talk about the prison complex, the social welfare system is another prison.
That people are
locked into for generations and generations. When you go into homes and you see the great grandmother and the grandmother and the mother and the child, and nobody is 50 years old. You understand what I'm talking about?
Something's wrong with that picture.
There's something wrong going on here, and then there's no men there.
You're right.
And these women need us too, just like the kids do.
Absolutely, especially if they have sons. But all kids, but especially sons, because a woman can't raise a boy to be a man. It's just, you can't raise something that you don't know.
So these men are absolutely needed. Even under the best circumstances, parenting is a tedious job. If you have a good job, you got a good education, now we have parents. Now, have all that. And they said, well, I don't have time. I'm too busy trying to make a living. We always got excuses for why we're not investing in the people that we're bringing into this world.
Yes.
And somebody has to stop and say, wait a minute. You know, one thing I agree with this is about, we are letting our own people down.
Yeah.
We know the system is against us. We know the system is dysfunctional. We know the system is unjust. But we, as men and as women, are letting our children down. You know, because if your child is not proud of who you are, not proud to call you mom or dad, you understand? That child doesn't have a foundation. It's very unlikely that they're gonna have that kind of support when they go out into these systems.
Right.
So it behooves us to continue this work moving forward. There is absolutely no reason in the world where we can't. You don't have to start off with 5,000 students. You could start off a school in Sacramento or whatever. You could lease a room from somebody. You might even be able to get somebody to donate the space for you to have class in the evening to work with these kids.
Mm-hmm.
We need to do that. We need to start there. And I would guarantee you that once it starts, you're going to find people trying, begging to get in. Wanting to get in, because even those kids who are out there getting in trouble, that's not what they want to do. They think that they have to do that to survive. And we have to teach them that you should not have to be about survival. Your job should be going to school and getting an education and paying attention to your parents and respecting your parents and respecting the elders in the community. So we have not been able, that's what we need to be focused on. And not be so grandiose in our process that we think we can move everything in one day. You understand? They said Rome wasn't built in a day. Kemet wasn't built in a day. We can do this piece by piece by piece and keep it going. If we start a school, I guess if we start a school in Sacramento, say we run it the first year, and maybe we didn't have 15 or 20 students. I guarantee you the next year we'll double that or triple that or even more.
Right.
So it's up to us. We have to provide the vehicle. If it's there, they will
have opportunity. Okay, so I would like to add also, there are a lot of kids right now who are in single-parent households, and a lot of these single-parent households have to work. Whether graveyard, whether 10, 12, 13-hour shifts and days, and having to have older siblings watch their younger siblings. So in a case like that, how do you be able to be involved in, do your due diligence in regards of your children? How do you work that? Because a lot of people feel so defeated, and it just looks like there's no light at the end of the tunnel. So what would you say to those parents? I mean, majority of people right now are single parent households. It makes sense, but realistically, you could only, it used to be a whole village. You used to have Big Mama and, the neighbor or, somebody who was able to help with the children, but we don't have that family structure anymore. We don't have the Big Mamas and all that type of stuff. So how do you, and I'm making excuses, but I'm just wondering, how does someone overcome those objections to be able to make sure that they're doing the best that they could do for their kids as well as their families, their households, and themselves?
We had a program once called CHIP. It was a Community Health Improvement Project. And it was just that. What we did was we went to those communities and we organized one block at a time. We have a meeting with every parent that lives in that block. We get to know every one of those kids, grandkids, nephews and nieces, whatever. But we started to working with them so that they would, and we had to, these parents have to be re-educated. We showed those parents how they were living on blocks and they were afraid to live on those blocks because kids were selling dope, they was doing all kinds of things. They was hanging out all the hours of the night and all these kind of things. And so what we did, by organizing one block at a time, we were able to get all of those people to commit to be aware and look out for whatever was going on in their block. and report it to somebody or call us, and we would come out and intervene.
Wow.
You know, so it's not one thing. You can't do one thing and get this done, because then if you provide this year after school program, then you have to provide other kinds of stuff for the weekend. Because one of the things we found out, we were working with the kids during the week, and then sometimes we go back to school Monday and we done lost two or three kids, you know, because they didn't have nowhere to go, or they was out hustling, trying to make money, or doing whatever. So we had to create programs that extended beyond the school day and into the weekend. Because, you know, people live 7 days a week. Kids go hungry 7 days a week. Parents are not at home 7 days a week sometimes. So there has to be a catch position for them to have access to, in order for them not to fall back into this, you know, to the street mentality. You know, you'd be surprised when you find kids 9 and 10 years old who are out there gangbanging and carrying guns and talking about they shooting at somebody because they was on their block, a block that they don't even own. You get to understand how deviated that thinking has become. And the only thing that can change that is to bring it back. We have to create a new dynamic reality for them, that they can be safe and they don't have to worry about how they're going to eat. They don't have to worry about whether they're going to have clean clothes. They don't have to worry about they'll have somewhere that they can be entertained and be involved in sports activities on the weekends, field trips, or whatever. You know, most of those kids.
Well, I believe that we have the viable answer, the solution to that. This is why I'm passionate about Bob Bus, because that is our new reality. Let's strengthen the black businesses, or small businesses, I'll just put it that way. Strengthen the small businesses within our community. That way we will be able to afford payroll. Let's start paying these children. So once you come out of school, then now you have to go to your job, and that's a trade in itself.
That's right.
That gives them an avenue for them to own their own money, and there's something about pride that comes along with that. So it's going to kill a few birds with one stone. And then as we start getting stronger and we're not so stressed and pressured with bills on our neck, if you will, and we have a little bit more freedom to move around, then we'll be energized. And all of that positive energy just passes one to the other. And what happens when light enters darkness, the darkness has to go away. But it's really going to take us to stop talking about it and let's just do something. And it takes more than a handful. It's going to take the whole village.
Yeah, there was a time when, you know, people could talk to rhetoric and talk about how militant they are and all that stuff. That has no place. It is time for work to actually be done. You have to have hands-on. You have to have commitment. Because let's not forget this. The people that was involved in our program, all of us had kids too.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had to commit on certain days that you'll be there and I'll be there, whatever. So we could support those kids, and that's why we incorporated with the 100 black men to get them. So if we could get 20 of you guys to volunteer to come and do XYZ, people will do this stuff, but they need somebody to formulate the vision so that they can see that they're making a contribution to better their community. There's nobody that won't work better than them.
Absolutely.
You know, I want to say this, and y'all can kind of like, you know, say something about it too. The pandemic. I was talking with this young brother out there today, okay, and I was asking him how the COVID-19 affecting his family. You know what he told me? It was shocking.
What?
He told me, he said, OG, he said, the pandemic is a disaster for health, but it's a blessing for a lot of people, especially African-American in the black community. It's a blessing. I said, why you say that? He said, man, don't you know they got households out here getting like $12,000, $16,000 a month? in one household. I say, what? He said, because, you know, the unemployment, you know, a lot of people is working, they're getting the unemployment, they're getting that extra $600, plus they're getting other stuff, you know, that they can get. He said, man, they got like 3 and 4 people living in one house that's getting that same money. He said, it's a blessing, bro. It's a blessing. He said,
well,
now,
I mean,
the health part of it is bad, but he said, you know, it's not affecting us that much. He said, I'm being real. It's not affecting me.
Yeah,
he said,
yeah,
we're putting our money up. We fixing to do some big things.
But see, that shows you a lack of vision. How long do you think the government, right now, they have that battling on whether to give people unemployment any more period? This stuff
now,
is
a lot
already.
It
was finalized as of yesterday, on the 31st, that stuff will not be coming anymore. And Congress and the Senate is up there battling right now because most of them don't want to give it out no more. And whatever it's going to be, I have a feeling it's going to be something less than what they've been getting. But here's the other part of that. Whatever they're giving them, it is not enough. I mean, I can understand if you lost your job because of COVID-19, you get unemployment. But come on, you make more money than you get from unemployment when you're working. You know, so I don't know how that's a benefit. I don't know how that's a benefit because I guess in a way you can survive off of it because you really can't do that much. You can't go anywhere. And the only thing you have to do is to worry about paying your rent and buying your groceries. But the reality of it is that this is going to end. And it may be ending very, very shortly. Very shortly. And what are they going to do then? You know, and to say something like that is a blessing. How is it a blessing when I think about 80 or 90,000 people have died in the country?
Yeah.
You know, and I mean,
yeah,
I'm not talking
what
about
he was saying.
About
I understood. I understood what he was trying to say. Okay, I understood exactly what he was saying. You working at jobs making minimum wage. Okay, barely paying your rent, barely paying everything. You're not making $600 a week.
That's
not
true.
Taking home. You know, and then they add on $600 a week. You see what I'm saying? So you're looking at $1,200 a week. Then you got some people up in the hood. I'm talking about in the hood. Some people up in the hood, man, wasn't even working.
Yeah,
you know,
getting
$75 a month. I mean, $75 a week unemployment, and now they're getting like, you know, big money.
Yeah,
but that's not everyone.
Yeah, here's the thing, though, brother. You can't get unemployment unless you was working a job prior to. You had to be working a job. So I don't know who these people are talking about. They're getting all this money. You had to be working a job. And then I've seen some people who were making maybe minimum wage. They are not getting that much money.
My
understanding is that you have to be making a certain amount of money. In fact,
I don't know. Okay.
Well,
this is
what
the young brother
told me.
Okay.
Well, I'm telling you what reality is. That you have to be making in order. They don't even want to give you $600 a week anymore. They now are fighting about the Republicans want to give you $200 a week. The Democrats want to give you a little more, but they do not want to give out that $600 anymore. That ended as of July 31st. That ended as of July 31st. Unless they come up with a new agreement, people ain't going to be getting no money in the next few weeks. I can tell you that right now. And first of all, you know, for unemployment, you have to have been working a job. It doesn't make any difference but minimum wage. But you get unemployment from the state based on what you were making. They don't give you any lump sum like the federal government come up with this thing because of COVID-19. We'll give each family $600.
Let me tell you something. I just talked with a lady, okay, about a week ago. Her son just got over $10,000, you understand, in one lump sum back pay from the unemployment office, okay?
Yes, correct.
Well, how much?
You know, you just, I mean, I don't know how he got it. I don't know. I didn't get in her business.
No,
but
what I'm saying is,
he got over 10 grand, man. Them people
well,
is
you
paying
know, that,
out
well,
money,
well,
and I'm gonna be honest with you. If you live in the hood, you understand. And if you live in poor, they finding ways to get that money, just like mm-hmm. them rich white folks is finding ways to get that money for their business. They
yeah.
gave
He's
out
absolutely
2.
Correct.
Point
He's right.
2,
He's right.
Listen,
but,
they gave out $2.2 trillion dollars.
Yeah,
Trump then found a way to get what was it? How much was it? $60 billion.
But
now they saying he can't
brother,
get no more.
Brother, what I'm telling
I mean,
you
there's
is
people out there trying to get them. They finding ways. This is what I'm trying to tell you. And this pandemic,
yeah,
I'm telling
you,
is bad for the health. But for young African Americans that was out there struggling, they are getting paid. I'm serious.
Well, brother, there are people, they have, the government have what they call small businessmen loans. There's a lot of people out here doing a whole lot of fakery and maybe gaining
mm-hmm.
access to something. But I'm telling you what reality is here, brother. You get unemployment from the state based on what your salary
Well, I already
was.
Know. I know how it works.
And the federal government gave you $600 those first two rounds. They don't want to do that anymore. They stopped it as of the 31st of July. So whoever was getting that money, they may be getting some money futuristically, but it ain't going to be no $600 a week because that's what they're looking at. They're saying we're giving these people too much money. They don't want to go back to work. And see, they don't want to. Yeah, so they're trying to force people to go back to work in spite of this disease that's on the rise.
That's what's going on.
Yeah, so but you gotta check out this stuff because a lot of people be telling you stuff that they're doing, and I know for a fact that the state, if you get a whole bunch of money from the state, it was an oversight, and they're going to come around and ask you to pay it back.
Yeah,
and
they're
going to
come after you, but they are getting that type of money because I heard it too. So he's absolutely right.
Hey, look here, let me tell you something, okay? This is a pandemic, man. This is a tragedy the United States ever been in since way back in 1916 or 17, something like that. Last pandemic we had. Now check this out. Them people is not coming back on them people, man. They not gonna do it.
You don't think so?
Them people? No, I don't think so. And it's not only the African Americans, man, is trying to get some of that money. I'm talking about them rich folks is trying to get money too. They're not getting $10,000, man. They getting like $5-6 million.
Yeah, well,
okay, I've been following it, I've been checking it out, I've been going out there talking with people, you know, because this is Uplifting Communities Talk Show. I was out all day today talking with people. I listen at all kind of, you know, talk shows to find out what's going on, man. I'm telling you, these people out there, you know, and it bothers me, and I'm saying I feel like you, Dr. Quaco. I feel like you, you know, like go to work, man. You don't have to, you know, say things that's not true to get your money.
Well, it's not so much that I don't. It doesn't bother me that they get the money. I just think about it. Another crippling process for our people because this is the government, brother. Nothing lasts forever. This stuff is going to
end. Oh, no,
it
ain't going to last forever. You're 100% right.
Yeah, so what are they going to do when it's time to go back and there ain't no jobs? Because a lot of
That's what he was saying. That's what he was saying, that they was putting that money up.
Yeah,
you know?
He
was telling me that in their household, the guy told me, man, in my house, my household, we getting at least about $12,000 a month. I say what?
Well,
wow.
Well, I mean, I can see where they would get depending on how many people live there. Because if everybody was working and then they're not working, all of them would be getting unemployment. But like I
right.
say,
and that extra money.
That's a temporary situation.
Yeah, and you tell my $600 a week in a month time, four times six, that's 20. That's what? How much is that? $2,400 right there. That's including the unemployment. Now, you got at least about four people in the house doing that. That's big money.
Yeah, you know, unfortunately,
yeah.
Like I say, this is a temporary thing. And for a lot of people, $2,400 a month is their house note. That ain't even paying the PG&E and all the other stuff. You know what I'm saying?
That's true.
So it's not a lot of money. It looks like a lot of money, but it's not a lot of money. And you know, you don't realize how much you really need to run a household until it gets down to the point where you don't have money to run it. Then you start to feeling it.
Somebody like me and you, we understand that because we own our own home. But you're in a hood, living in the apartments. You understand? And my problem on Section 8. You understand? Probably on Section 8, I ain't paying no more than $350 a month. You know what I'm saying? $3,000 a month coming into your household, man. That's a lot of money. Well, anyway, Miss Phyllis, we only got like 3 minutes left on the show, and I'm actually going to start closing this out.
We said it was going to be powerful. I mean,
yes.
We didn't have an opportunity to ask questions.
I already knew.
I know, right? But you know, that's why you need to tune in every week, because we have exciting conversations to better our community with Uplifting Communities Talk Show, and we're hosting Build Our Businesses on the radio. Thank you so much for listening. John L. Brown, thank you so much for your sponsorship. Dr. Kwaku, thank you so much for giving so much of your time, heart, and felt and energy. I'm just impressed. I stand in awe.
Thank you, sister. I'm always glad to be a part of the process that's going to move the needle so that we are no longer a dependent people, you know, so let's stay at it. Let's call me anytime. I'm always ready to go.
Thank you. Thank you for that. All right, Mr. John L. Brown.
Okay. I want to thank everybody for coming on the show, and I have to always end the show with a small prayer. Not a big prayer, you know. And, Lord, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for Phyllis and Erlene and Dr. Quake. I want to thank you, Lord, for just allowing us to come on this platform, you know, so that way we can open the eyes to the world. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Thank you. Just thank you. You know, that's all I can say is just thank you, thank you, thank you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
Amen.
And
wow,
good
that
night,
was beautiful.
Everybody.
Another
everybody have a good evening, and we'll talk later. Bye-bye.
We'll talk later.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.